This episode of Zdenek's English Podcast is sponsored by a brand new podcast, The Footglish Podcast, an English learning podcast about football by the same podcaster that records this podcast. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Shut up! I'm listening to Zdenek's English Podcast. You're listening to Zdenek's English Podcast. By far the greatest English podcast on earth for English learners since sliced bread. My name is Zdenek and I'm your host. Hello guys, welcome back to Zdenek's English Podcast. And today's podcast, I hope, is going to be to the point, because I'm talking to Ben from the To The Point English YouTube channel. Hi, Ben. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Zdenek. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Anytime, man, anytime. It's been a while since I talked to you last time. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm very well. Not much news, to be honest. Just making YouTube videos and preparing people for their Cambridge exams, that type of thing. But yeah, all good here. How are things with you?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm in Vietnam, so I'm preparing for going back to Europe for a few months. And all right. The plan is to probably come back here after that, but we will see. It's still open, more or less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's nice to have the option, isn't it?
Doesn't really matter where you are when you record stuff online. So.
No, exactly. That's the beauty of it. You can live anywhere in the world with a half decent internet connection, and you can keep it going.
Exactly. So Ben, just to remind my listeners, you are an English teacher, a mm-hmm. YouTuber, and I would say you're something like a Cambridge exam specialist. Yeah? You specialize in teaching exams such as Cambridge First, Cambridge Advanced, and Cambridge Proficiency. And mm-hmm. the old names were FCE, CAE, CPE. I still use them. And do you?
Yeah, it's strange. It's a mix now because when I make a video and I put the description of what's in the video, I have to put both the old name, so for example, CPE, and the new name, C2 Proficiency, because some people still use the old name and some people only know it as its new name. So it's all a bit confusing. But yeah, the FCE is the B2 First, CAE is C1 Advanced, and CPE is C2 Proficiency. Those are the three Cambridge exams that I specialize in. That's right.
There's going to be a generational divide, Ben, I think. Yeah. I think the boomers will always use FCE, CPE, CAE. You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
That's true.
And then the Generation Z, they will never have heard of these acronyms. No. So they will be so confused.
Exactly. It took me months, if not years, to get used to the new names. And now we're in the middle. Yeah, so it's all... It depends who you're talking to, really. Some people have no idea what the CAE is. Some people have no idea what the C1 Advanced is. But yeah, I think Cambridge should maybe invent a new name, a completely new name.
Another so one.
Or just to start again, because it's so confusing at the moment. Just maybe, I don't know. I think there are a lot of changes coming in the next few years.
If you do that, Ben, you know what's going to happen? You're going to have a three-way confusion.
Yeah. That's true. And I wouldn't have enough space on my YouTube video thumbnails to put all the different names in. Yeah,
and so the keywords as well. You know, there's a limit for your keywords as well.
Exactly. Yeah. It's crazy.
All right, Ben. So just to remind our viewers and listeners, I say viewers because this is also published on my YouTube channel, on the Teach Zdenek YouTube channel. And we have done a podcast. It was back in 2020, I believe, during the COVID time. And since then, I remember when I was doing that with you, you were like one of those YouTubers like me, I would say, with just a couple of subscribers. But since then, you have come a long way. Your YouTube channel has taken off. And we can even see behind you, there is that, what do you call that? The placard, what's that?
I call it a plaque, but I think they call it the YouTube button. It's a button, I think they call it, but it's like a plaque.
Yeah, that's silver button. Yeah, is that silver or
That's the silver one, yeah. It's not real silver, but
It's
it is
not. Have you
it's quite
checked?
nice. I haven't checked, but you can feel it. It's quite good. It's quite heavy and it feels quality, but it's not real silver. But yeah, that's the 100,000 subscriber button. You say I don't remember the word you used that it's taken off.
Yeah.
It was like a spike. So as you said, I was kind of just chugging along at a few hundred or a few thousand subscribers, and then it took off for about 2 months, and then it went back down again. So I don't know what happened. I think the YouTube algorithm got excited and started recommending my videos all over the world, and then it calmed down, and now it's just continuing. So I got that. I reached the 100,000 subscriber mark about 2 years ago. No, a year and a half ago. So now 150,000. So it's all good. It's as you know, it's not just about getting subscribers. It's about helping people. I think it's the beauty of having this, being online, having an online presence. You can just reach more people and help more people as you do.
Yeah, but that number is kind of, it's like in this world of content creation, it tells you something, right? So you have reached out to so many people and people have been following you, and that's a good thing. And
Yeah.
I'm kind of proud that I knew you back then when you were not famous yet. It makes me feel proud, that you were on my podcast when, because
Yeah.
I knew there was potential in you. So
You spotted me before everyone else did, before the algorithm did at least. Yeah.
absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Or maybe it was because of my appearance on your podcast that
I don't think so.
it created the first ripples. But no, yeah,
I
it's all
doubt
fun.
that.
I think it I don't know, who knows how the
But it's a good
algorithm
story. It
works.
would be a good story.
Yeah. It's all down to you.
Oh,
Maybe it was the
of
same
course.
of other people who have appeared on your podcast who have now have hundreds of thousands of subscribers.
And
It's all down to you.
those that don't, we don't talk about them.
Oh no. Don't mention those.
And also, one more thing we should say is that you've been on my YouTube channel a few times because you are a West Ham fan. You support the Hammers, and
That's right.
I used to run this show called English Learn English with Football, where I would review the Premier League weekend, and occasionally you came on as well to talk
Yeah.
about West Ham matches. So that we have done that too a few times,
Yeah.
haven't we?
It's good fun. It's good fun to talk about something that we enjoy other than teaching English. Of course, we both enjoy teaching English, but it's our job. But something we have in common, which is football in this case. And
Exactly.
yeah, and you have a bit of a connection with West Ham too,
I
with the
do. I do. I
Czech
do.
players. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. Well, I invited you, Ben, today. First of all, I really wanted to catch up with you because.
Hi, I am Serkan. I like the Achievers Chamber because it helps you practice whenever you want.
For more information about the Achievers Chamber, go to teachersdenek.com. I really wanted to catch up with you because I thought it was a nice opportunity to do it. Now that you have the silver button. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm joking. I really think it's a nice opportunity to discuss with you something related to exams, because there's another connection. Now that I'm living in Vietnam, Ben, I teach quite a few exam classes, but as you may guess, here it's more about the IELTS exam. But would you say that a lot of the stuff that we can talk about, there's a lot of overlap, right, between the IELTS exam and these Cambridge exams that you mentioned?
Yes, and other exams too, I think. I mean, there are some tips that I give that, I'm thinking of the B2 first, C1 advanced, C2 proficiency Cambridge English exams, but they are completely valid for other exams. There's some things that just apply to all exams or most English exams, really. So, yeah, I mean, I don't specialize in IELTS, but I know the general format, and I know there are some similarities to the Cambridge exams. So, yeah, a lot of the tips and the preparation should be quite similar too.
So I assume you teach kind of all the skills, don't you? Because the thing is, I only teach IELTS speaking here.
Okay.
That's
Yeah.
what I do.
No, I teach all the skills. I have online preparation courses which look at every single part of every paper of the exams. So I give tips, yeah, on how to do the use of English, the reading, the writing, listening, and speaking. I think some people struggle with different areas. A lot of people do struggle with the speaking. I think the writing paper is probably the one that most people struggle with the most, but also listening. So it depends. I mean, these are very difficult exams, the Cambridge exams. Even the B2 first, which is the lowest level that I teach or that I help students prepare for, it's a difficult exam. It's a really tough exam. So, when you talk about the C1 advanced and C2 proficiency, that they're tough, and you need to prepare well, and you need a strategy, and you need to know how to approach every part. And it's the same for the IELTS.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned writing being the toughest part. I took the exam back in 2017 just to see. I think at the time I wanted to go to the Middle East to teach in the Middle East. And someone told me that I would need to prove my level to them, not being a native speaker. And
Right.
I did get 8 in IELTS in the end, but only because I completely messed up the writing part. I only got 7 in
Right.
writing. And that's
Right.
after having written a master's thesis in English and all that. So it's
Right.
not like I can't write. It's just I didn't prepare properly for it, and I didn't have
That's
enough
it.
time to proofread it, and I wrote too much. So
Right.
I got only 7, and as a result, my overall score was 8. I was just half a point away from getting 8.5 in overall score just because of that bloody
That would have been
writing.
C2 level,
I
right?
would
If
have
you
been
got
C.
8.5,
Now I'm like borderline C1, C2, I guess.
yeah.
I
I mean,
still think I'm C2, but like I need
Zdenek,
that. I need.
you are C2. You are definitely a C2 English speaker, without a doubt. I can tell you that.
Oh, thank
But
God.
that's the frustrating thing about exams, is that you don't always get the score that you deserve, or kind of deserve. I mean, if you had prepared for the writing, you would have got that score. And I see that so often with my students. They kind of either they don't prepare enough for the exam in general, or they neglect the writing paper, because nobody likes writing essays
Oh,
or
I hate
reports or
it. I
things.
can't stand it. I
Yeah.
can't bear it.
Yeah. That's the
All
thing.
that.
Everyone will find an excuse, or
Yeah.
and it's such a pity, because it could, as you, in your case, it can mean the difference between C1 and C2, or B2, C1, or even a pass and a fail. So, well, obviously you can't fail the IELTS, but with the B2 first, C1 advanced, and C2 proficiency, you can. I know nobody likes it. Nobody enjoys
Hey,
writing
Ben,
essays or nothing, but
sorry to interrupt you. I don't even like teaching it. As a teacher, yeah,
right.
I've got my own preferences. I know exactly who I love to teach, what sort of levels I love to teach. For example, I don't like teaching the little children, right? It's not for me. Thank you very much. I
Yeah.
prefer adults or
Yeah.
teenagers at most.
I know. Yeah.
And then
I feel the same.
what to teach so I can also become a specialist, right? So here in Vietnam, they are quite happy about the fact that I teach IELTS speaking because of my pronunciation, which is very clear. And also, that's what they do here. The Vietnamese teachers teach more the passive skills, let's say, and what do you call it? Not passive skill, the receptive, sorry,
The
the
receptive
receptive
skills,
skills,
yeah,
whereas the foreign teachers teach the productive skills, and
right,
especially speaking.
yeah. Well, writing is one of the productive skills, but as you said, nobody likes doing it or teaching it. It's and I find that my students who bite the bullet and decide to practice writing an essay or one of the other tasks, they really want me to do everything for them. They want me to say, well, what phrase can I use here? What linker can I use here? What grammar should I use? And I do give them as many tips and as much help as possible, but at the end of the day, it's them that has to write the
Absolutely.
composition. They have to think about what content they want to include and how they want to pr present the information and express their ideas. And it's practice. Unfortunately,
Yeah.
at the end of the day, it's the only way to improve, especially writing. It's just by doing it. And it's just sitting down and starting. Yeah, you don't have to, the first time you do it, you don't have to write a complete essay in 45 minutes. You can take your time, just write a
One
part, the
paragraph or
introduction paragraph one day and just get started. And as I said, it's so frustrating as a teacher who helps students prepare for the exam to see these results statements where, people could get an A in speaking, an A in use of English, and maybe a C or a D level in the writing just because they didn't prepare.
that's a huge
So it's,
discrepancy, isn't it? Well,
yeah.
Ben, first of all, let me remind everyone, yeah. To the Point English with Ben is the name of your channel, of your YouTube channel.
That's
And
right.
there is also a dot at the end, isn't there?
I
I think
like a
there
full stop after
a
Ben.
full stop, yeah.
Okay, I don't
There
remember
is,
doing that,
there
but
is.
yeah,
I've just checked your,
that's the
yeah.
point, I guess. That's the
I knew
to the point.
that's like a little joke, like an inside joke. And
Probably when I
yeah.
came up with it, it was years ago when I set up my YouTube channel. I probably did do that on purpose. Yeah.
I think it doesn't matter if you when you are searching for the YouTube channel in the search bar, I don't think it
No, yeah.
matters if you don't add the full stop there. But I think it is there anyway. So that's where people can find your YouTube channel. But you also mentioned that you've got some courses, yeah. So
Yeah.
where can we find that then?
Well, in the description of pretty much all my YouTube videos, you'll find a link to my online courses. Also on my website, which is ttpenglish.com. So TTP, like from to the point, ttpenglish.com.
TTP.
Yeah, and also I have an Instagram account, which relatively active on, not very, but you can find the link there. But yeah, to be honest, I because I was specializing in the Cambridge exams through my YouTube videos, I was getting a lot of interest from students who wanted me to help them prepare. They wanted classes, preparation classes, and I didn't have enough time to be able to take on all the students. So I thought, what can I do? Well, I'll just record basically my classes that I give, with all the slides, all the information, all my tips, and I'll make them into an online course. So although I can't give the classes myself, people can go on and they see the video lessons. And I, as I said, I'd look at in detail at all the different parts of the exams. And there are advantages and disadvantages to online courses, but I think there are more advantages. They're cheaper, first of all, than face-to-face classes overall. You can do them at your own pace, at your own time, from your house or from, even if you're on the train or on the bus, traveling to work or school, whatever.
You're an offline, you download it somewhere, and
Exactly.
then
Yeah,
you
yeah. And you can repeat the lesson as many times as you want.
That's true. Without
Students.
getting embarrassed, and there's
Exactly. Yeah.
nobody needs to know.
Exactly. Yeah. If you missed something, just rewind the video.
Yeah.
But students can contact me as well. There's a discussion option on each of the lessons where they can ask me, and I reply to every question I get. So, I think, as I said before, this online world is amazing, and I think it's good for us as teachers, but also for the students. There are so many options now. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thank you for telling us about that. And now the next part of the show is, Ben, I have prepared something for us. You know how I told you that I teach IELTS speaking here? Well, one day I prepared an exercise for my students. Basically, it's a couple of statements about the exam. It's just sort of like generic statements to do with the exam. It's like thinking of, let's say, pros and cons and do's and don'ts this in this kind of sense. And I thought what we could do is go through all these statements one by one, and I'm gonna basically pick your brain about it. Again, this was made for IELTS, but I think it's going to apply to all those Cambridge exams as well. It's going to be very similar. I think the main difference is that you describe pictures there, right? There's one exercise we have images. And you have to describe them, right? And
Well, I'll just correct you there, because you don't have to describe them. That's the big, that's quite important, because that you're never asked to describe the pictures. You're asked to compare and answer the questions. Yeah,
You're
so
right. Yeah,
that's,
you're right. You're right.
yeah.
Compare them and sort of you don't talk about what you see visually. It's not about like telling the examiner that, oh, there's a bird in the top left corner.
Exactly,
I guess you
yeah.
could say it, but what you need to do is to go sort of beyond that and talk about that topic in a
Well,
more
yeah,
abstract sense, let's say.
it's inevitable that you will have to say what is in the picture, and in the pictures, but you have to do it in a way in which you are comparing, not just describing. So you could say in the first, well, in fact, I always recommend to my students to say, in the first picture we can see, well, no, sorry, I always recommend we say, in both pictures we can see people playing musical instruments. For example, in the first picture there are two people playing the guitar or playing guitars, whereas in the second picture the people are playing the drums, for
Right.
example.
So
So
there's a lot of boxes ticked already. I hear it all,
exactly,
Ben. I hear it all.
yeah,
Present continuous. There is a linker there. There's all sorts of things going on at the same time. And then I think
exactly.
it's about this exercise is about proving to the examiner that you can use comparative language, a language used for comparing, right? So
Yes.
structures like
Exactly.
it's not as and far more than and stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And also speculative vocabulary, because you'll get, well, depending on the exam, one or two questions. And well, really we're talking about the B2 first and C1 advanced here, but and the questions will be like, what might the people be feeling? So you can't say the people are feeling very happy, because you don't know. You're speculating. You say, well, the people might be, or perhaps they are feeling happy, or it looks like they are happy, that type of thing. Yeah.
And my personal favorite would be to use speculative language to talk about the past. So this here's
Right.
my sentence. I would say, oh, this picture must have been taken in a I don't know, in a city, right? So you say
Yeah.
must have been plus ED.
Exactly.
Oh my God,
Yeah.
that's like the examiner will be over the
Excellent.
moon if you say
There'll
that.
be, yeah, you'll get a pass
What's
immediately. You could finish the exam there.
examiner's wet dream, we could say.
Exactly. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Literally. But yeah, that might have, they might have been, maybe they look tired. So you say, well, the people in the picture look tired. They might have been running. They
You
might
might.
have been running. So yeah, that's that structure of past speculation. So little things like that, which they're not easy, but they're, once you learn them, you can use them
It's
almost whatever the picture you have.
exactly. It's a strategy. It's what I'm trying to
Yeah.
instill in my students. I'm trying to drum it into them that you have certain structures that you can kind of almost always use if you're clever about it. If
Yeah.
you can improvise and you can sort of see think outside the box, and it's really possible to do that. Like
Yeah.
there are certain structures which are so flexible. You can almost always use that. Like the one I just told
Yeah.
you, it must have been taken. So listen, it specs you're using modal verb to speculate about the past. It's also in passive. This is like, oh my God,
Yeah.
like it's
Yeah,
perfect. And
yeah.
you can almost always say that. Because
Yeah.
every picture, someone must have taken the picture, right?
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
there is a location where the picture was taken. Okay, it
Yeah.
may not always be relevant to say that, but it's kind of easy to do if it's your first sentence or something.
Yeah.
And once you use this, it's also going to affect your confidence, I think, because you know, oh, yeah,
Yes.
I've done it, and then you just keep going. You know, it's like your springboard or something.
I think it will affect your confidence once you've used it, but also before, knowing that you have that up your sleeve, that you have this fantastic grammatical structure that you can use, then that will make you feel more confident. You're not going into the unknown without anything prepared. You think, okay, well, I can use, it's the same with vocabulary. There are
Yeah,
certain
absolutely.
words you can use, whatever the pictures are. So you just feel more confident that you're going to impress the examiners somehow.
Absolutely,
So
absolutely.
you can relax a little bit and just do it. But it's all about preparing, because we're talking about one task in the speaking paper of a big exam. So You have to have that attitude to every single part of the
Yeah.
exam. And it takes time to develop a strategy, because there are other things to take into consideration too. But you may ask me about those now, so I won't
Yeah.
go on, because we have to think about time management and that type of thing. So
Yeah.
it's all
Speaking of time
important.
management, this is exactly what I struggle with here on the Next English Podcast. And sometimes I
Right.
tend to go off on a tangent. Yeah.
Right.
It's exactly what just happened because I was about to go through those statements with you. And then for
Yeah.
some reason, we ended up talking about images and pictures. But that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Here on this podcast, we are forgiven. It's
Anything
not.
goes, yeah.
Anything goes. It's not such a big
Yeah.
deal. Okay, so I've got 15 of them. So, I mean, we could try to go fast or just cover just a few of them. Doesn't matter. We'll see what happens. Let's just wing it. So Ben, the first statements, and I just a disclaimer: all of these I made them by myself. Yeah. So if you don't like any of them or if you think they're hogwash, then just you, it's fine.
Okay.
You can always. Question them as well. So, if you're confident, it's okay to take the Cambridge exam or IELTS exam without preparation. Then, what do you think?
No, I disagree completely. I guess you're expecting that answer.
Yes.
I think that's one of the biggest mistakes people make, and the number one reason, one of the main reasons that people fail is overconfidence, especially with the C2 proficiency. A lot of people have a really good level of English. It's true, perhaps they have a C2 level of English, so they think they don't need to prepare for the exam. That's a huge mistake. Maybe you wouldn't fail, but you wouldn't get the score that you
Yeah.
could possibly get just by preparing, understanding what you have to do, what is asked of you, what. Again, time management, having a strategy for each part. I've seen it so often that people underestimate the exams, that they don't really understand what they're getting themselves in for,
Yeah.
and then they don't pass,
Yeah.
or they don't get the score they could get. So yeah, definitely you need to
Even
prepare.
though their English might be actually, or their English proficiency might be actually really, really high level. And they could
Yes.
even be native speakers because if I, well, I occasionally I check these sort of statistics online about where the IELTS takers are from. And if you go through the countries, the native speaker countries, they are actually not on the top of the list, which you would assume they are not. And I always wonder why. And it's probably because of that. The takers, they know they're native speakers and they get complacent about the exam. Or
Yeah.
I have no idea why this is happening.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if those people from those native speaker countries are actually native English speakers, or they're just
Well,
living
they
there
have
and they're
to say
registered.
what their first language is, and
Oh,
their
okay.
it's
I see.
their first language is English,
Right.
so it could be someone I don't know from South Africa. It could be some I know some Indian people from India, but not all of
Yeah.
them. They
Yeah.
have English as their
Yeah.
first language. It could be someone from Great Britain, Canada, USA, but
Yeah.
they think, oh, okay, what's this exam about? Oh, it's going to tell me what my English level is, right? Yeah. There are four skills. You just quickly look at it. I was like, okay, this is a piece of cake. But then it's not, because
It's not.
it's not.
No, because
Especially,
if
I
you.
think the writing part might be the one that, because the speaking that usually kind of shows, right? You can it kind
Yeah.
of shows if you can speak English or not. But with
Yeah.
the writing part, also the listening could be tricky as well, because
Listening
it's
could,
not
yeah,
only
because you
listening,
really.
it's multitasking. It's a lot of
It's multitasking.
multitasking.
You need to be really focused.
Yeah.
I do the tasks before I teach them, before I prepare, and I struggle. I usually get the questions right, but I have to really concentrate, because you have to
Exactly.
understand what. Again, if the first time you do any of these tasks is on the day of the exam, you're going to struggle, because it
Absolutely.
will be
Yeah.
very overwhelming. It's going to be you'll be in for a shock. So
Yeah.
yeah, even native English speakers would need to prepare
Absolutely.
to a
You just
certain
need to
extent. Yeah.
go through that experience of just familiarizing yourself with the format, with the exam format. So I think this one is, there's no doubt about this, that
Yeah.
this is absolutely wrong. So my second question is, asking examiner questions is okay. Where do you stand on this, Ben?
In the speaking paper,
Yes.
obviously,
It's all about speaking, by the way. All these questions are
Oh, these are
really,
all about speaking. Okay.
I mean, the first one was kind of about
It's more
everything, but
general, yeah. No, you shouldn't ask the. It depends. I mean, you can ask them to repeat the question. There's no problem with asking them to repeat the question. You don't lose marks. You won't be penalized for that. I mean, just do it once. Don't ask it three or four times. But generally, no, it's not an interaction with your with the examiner. It's you. I don't know with the IELTS, but in the Cambridge exams, you will have a partner or at least one partner, maybe two. And there will be interactive tasks, but yeah, you shouldn't really ask the examiner his or her opinion or to react. And
Always makes
I
me
guess
laugh when I'm explaining this to my students. I always tell them, okay, so when the examiner asks you where you're from and what you, I don't know, what you do in your free time, don't
and
end
you?
answering the questions answering that question by saying, and what about you? Don't
Yeah.
do just don't do that.
No, it maybe your instinct is to do that because you're polite and you want
Yes.
to, you know, you think you should be natural, but no, it's not important what the examiners think or where they're from. So no, just answer the questions and interact with your partner when necessary.
Right, that's for the Cambridge exams because in the IELTS exam there is no partner.
Right.
But
Okay.
when it comes to examiners, just they're like, I don't want to say a fly on the wall. It's not the exact expression,
Well,
but they are there only to ask you questions and assess your English.
in the Cambridge exams, there are two examiners in the room. There's the interlocutor who's there to ask the questions and monitor the time and just
Yeah.
make sure it all goes to plan. And then the assessor, who is
Right.
more like a fly on the wall, they won't participate in any of the tasks, but they will be taking notes and evaluating and assessing your performance. So, yeah, there are two examiners, but you only
Yeah.
respond to the interlocutor.
And in the IELTS exam, there's only one person, and that person
Right.
also assesses your speaking, as far as I know,
Right.
because I know one IELTS examiner here in Vietnam, actually. I cannot tell his name or her name if it's a woman, and
Right.
I'm not supposed to because
Right.
they have to remain undercover.
Right. Anonymous. Yeah, that's a
Anonymous, yeah.
top secret.
Top secret, yeah. But they told me some ins and outs about the IELTS exam, so yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree with you, Ben. So number three, it's a good idea to correct yourself when you realize you've made a mistake.
Yes, I would agree with that one. Not if you realize like 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes later, don't go back and say, "Oh, by the way, that mistake I made 2 minutes ago, I meant to say that." No, just if it's at the same moment. So if you make a mistake and you realize immediately, then just yeah, correct yourself. And then again, in the Cambridge exams, that assessor who's waiting to take notes will not note that mistake. You've corrected yourself, so it's forgotten and forgiven.
What if I did? What did I? What if I did the following, Ben? What if I said, "Oh, by the way, the mistake I made 2 minutes ago, I feel really ashamed about that. And had I not made that mistake, I would now feel so much better. Now this would be a mixed conditional, Ben. Wouldn't that be
Oh,
wonderful?"
it would be a very impressive mixed conditional. That's great, but it would be irrelevant, I think they would say, because that wouldn't be the task. Whatever the question the interlocutor asked you wouldn't be about that. So
Unless
if mm-hmm.
it's a question about making mistakes.
Yeah, in that case, you could use it as an example. Oh, for example, that mistake I made 2 minutes ago, had I not made that mistake, yeah, et cetera. So, but yeah, in general, I think you should just focus on the task you're on.
At
These
hand.
speaking, these speaking tests pass so quickly that in the Cambridge English exams, they're about 15 or 16 minutes. You don't have time to sort of think back to the mistakes you've made or to analyze yourself. You just have to stay in the zone and focus on the task at hand, as you said.
Yes, and I've got one student. Yeah, I'm not going to say what their name is, but they always apologize after making a mistake. So that's another thing I would say you should probably avoid doing, because it only slows you down and reduces your confidence, and you're going to end up being self-conscious and Don't do that. Don't apologize for making mistakes. Like you can say
No.
it once. You can say I'm sorry or something.
Yeah.
But just don't
Yeah, you can say,
constantly apologize every single time you make a mistake, just to acknowledge
yeah.
that you've made the mistake. It's just, you're wasting your time, basically.
Yeah, and a very limited time and precious time in the exams. You know, the time they give you is for you to demonstrate your level. So you have to use every second to the best of your ability. Take advantage of every second. Yeah.
And embrace the fact that you may occasionally make mistakes, because everybody does. And it's part of
Yeah.
the learning process, as we always say, us the English teachers. And if you're not at that C2 level, like you're expected to make mistakes. So just get on with it.
Yeah, you can still get an A in your exam if you make a mistake or a few mistakes. I think that's a mistake or a misunderstanding.
Misconception,
Yeah, especially
myth,
with the
a myth.
C2 proficiency. I think people think if you get an A in the C2 proficiency, you're perfect. You're basically a native speaker. You're fluent. It's not the case. You can get an A. You can make mistakes and still get an A in all of the exams. It's not about perfection. It's just demonstrating your high level of English. It's,
Absolutely.
you know.
I couldn't agree more. So, number four, rambling and going off topic is better than staying silent.
Ooh. That's an
So we've got like two
interesting one.
extremes, right? Two extremes.
Yeah,
Someone who doesn't talk much or makes long pauses, and on the other side of the spectrum, we've got a candidate who just talks too much and often doesn't follow the main topic.
Yeah, I think neither of them are ideal. Like you want to try to avoid both, but I would say the rambling is better than silence.
Yes.
You know, the examiners need something to evaluate. You need to give them content. So
Exactly.
saying anything is better than saying nothing.
That's what I was hoping
But
for.
right, yeah. And anyway, the interlocutor in the Cambridge English exams is responsible for interrupting you. If they feel the answer is too long or they have enough information, then they just will interrupt you, say thank you.
Okay, Ben. So next one on my list here is it's always a good idea to take risks using high-level vocabulary, even if you are not sure. I mean, let's say you don't know exactly how to pronounce it, or you don't know if it's an idiom, you don't know the grammar around it. Is there an article or not? Which preposition should I use? So where do you stand on this one?
That's a tricky one because I think you should. I wouldn't say you should take risks because this is an exam. I think when you're in class or in real life situations, I think it's a good idea to practice different vocabulary, different idioms, expressions, even if you're not 100% sure, because that's how you learn by using them. But in an exam, they are evaluating. You know, if you're using the appropriate words and expressions, it probably depends on the level too. I mean, if you attempt a high level idiom in the B2 first exam, the examiners are going to appreciate the attempt, even if you don't get it quite right. But at C2 level, for example, you're expected to be more precise with your vocabulary. You should use the right preposition. You should, you know, you should get the word, you know, with binomials, for example, you should use them. You know, you don't say cheese and chalk, you should say chalk and cheese, those little details that are important at C2 level.
But if it's a
So that's a tricky one.
trinomial, it's going to be even worse.
Yeah.
Is it tall, dark, and handsome, or is it handsome, tall, dark, or is it
No.
handsome, dark, and tall?
You
Which
got
one
it
is
right the first time. I think instinctively
it?
it is tall, dark, and handsome. Yeah, it just flows. For me, it flows better. Yeah, tall, dark, and handsome. But I mean that is a tricky question because I would encourage students in general to have fun and experiment with and not experiment but tr risk take risks as you said, try different types of expressions in other situations. But in an exam, I think you should probably play it a bit safer and don't take so many risks.
That's
Would you agree with
interesting.
that or?
I would to a point. Personally, I think it's worth taking at least a little risk. Otherwise, I think your speech might end up being very boring and mundane. And so I would say there's a good balance to taking some risks and not taking any risks at all. But
Yeah,
I
calculated risks.
a calculated risk, yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, it's okay with idioms, let's say. It really depends on the level, as you said. But like, if I'm not sure, I don't know. There are so many idioms where I'm not sure if it's with the or for instance, right? And I feel like if you're clever about it, and for example, you say it very fast, it's almost it you can't almost hear the difference between and the sometimes. So that's one way of bypassing that, I suppose. But yeah.
I think the pro sometimes I see I have students who are really obsessed with the vocabulary. They think that they just have to include seven advanced expressions in every or words in every sentence, and it just sounds unnatural, and they don't get some of them quite right, and it can be quite difficult to understand them sometimes because they're just trying too hard. And it's not about using lots of advanced vocabulary. It's about using the appropriate vocabulary for the context. And if sometimes that appropriate vocabulary happens to be an advanced word or expression, fantastic. But I think you have to be careful when you try to force vocabulary into your answers. It's a balance.
It's a balancing act. You have to sound natural after all, and that includes sometimes using pauses and stuff like that, and vague expressions like stuff like that. And you know, and don't just use idioms for the sake of using idioms. Although I may be a hypocrite because I sometimes tell my students do exactly that in a clever way, though. Just don't
In a
overdo
clever way,
it. Don't
if you're
overdo it.
confident, I think you need to be confident in that you know how to use the idiom and that you're using it in the right context with the right order of the words, because they can be difficult. But if you another problem is that some people start using an idiom and they get stuck in the middle because they're not really sure how to finish it, and they start panicking.
Just as long as you don't put the horse before the cart, you are fine, man.
Exactly. That's
Or is it cart
the
before the horse?
cart before the horse. Don't put the cart before the horse. It's a good example. Because obviously it's more natural for the horse to go in front of the cart, so the opposite would be strange. But
Yeah,
that's the idea of the idiom.
that was a joke.
Yes.
All right. That's what you could do as well. Like if you tell this idiom and it's a joke. I mean, I'm not sure. One of the statements is about jokes, but actually, I should find it now. Let's see, where is it? God, I cannot see it now. Anyway, it will come sooner or later. Okay, how about this one then? You should never use the same words as the examiner used in the exam, in the question, sorry, in the question.
Never. That's a very strong word, a very definitive word. No, I wouldn't say. I think you can use the same words. I think you should try to paraphrase or find synonyms when you can, but sometimes it's kind of inevitable, or it's very difficult to avoid using the same words. And I mean, that's it's similar in the writing paper too. I see students sometimes writing any word except the word that's in the question, and that sometimes it's very unnatural. So similar with the speaking, you don't want to, if you can avoid sort of repeating any vocabulary, whether it's the examiner, yourself repeating words you've already used, or your partner, you want to try and avoid that as much as possible. But sometimes it's not possible, so it's not a big problem. Sometimes you can repeat the words and then add a synonym or use a synonym later or paraphrase, but I wouldn't say never. No.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think it boils down to the word itself. Like if it's a word, like if someone asks you a question about computers, what's a synonym for computers? Machines, machines, that compute.
Learning machines of some kind. It just doesn't make sense. And I've seen things like with children, when children is in the question, and people say teenagers or adolescents or toddlers, or it's not the same. And yeah, those are all types of children, but children is more general. So you're specifying it, and it's a
Exactly.
good idea to find, if you can find a synonym, but kids is fine, a good synonym in speaking for children. So yeah, be careful with that. It's,
Yes,
again,
I
it's common sense, really.
it is, yes. Okay. It's better to be nervous about the exam than overconfident. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say yes. I think it's natural to be nervous. It's almost everybody gets nervous before an exam. Not, you know, there are a few very confident people that don't get nervous, but it's completely natural. And nerves, or being nervous, can help you to focus. That's why we get nervous, I think, to help us do these difficult things well. If, you know, if you weren't nervous, you probably wouldn't force yourself to prepare enough and focus on the day of the exam. So yes, I would definitely say it's better to be nervous than overconfident, but again, it's a balance. You don't, excessive nerves can be a hindrance in the exam, because you can't think clearly. So if you can just take deep breaths and try to control your nerves a little bit, then that's great, but definitely better than being overconfident.
Can you be overconfident and nervous at the same time? Is that even possible?
I don't think so, but perhaps. I think some people are very confident before the exam, but the moment they're in the exam room, they suddenly get nervous, and that's a problem, because they then hadn't prepared, and they have the worst of both worlds. They're not prepared, and they're nervous.
Yeah, well said, well said. All
I
right.
might just It's a good opportunity. One little, I don't know if it's a motto, slogan, I say, don't be scared, be prepared, because the way to avoid or to overcome nerves is to be prepared. You know, the more prepared you are, the less nervous you will be, usually. That's the
Absolutely.
case. Yeah.
Absolutely. How about this one? Being well dressed, keeping eye contact, and using body language and hand gestures matters.
Yes, I think that all the body language and hand, the non-verbal communication is important. It's not evaluated. There's no, like, it's not part of the marking criteria, but it does. Again, talking about the Cambridge exams, where you have a partner, you should look at your partner and sort of turn your body towards them when they're speaking, to show that you're paying attention, and nod your head when you agree, smile when they say something funny, that type of thing. That's part of communication. So yes, I think that matters. Being well dressed, again, it depends. I mean, yeah, don't go in, probably I wouldn't recommend you go to the exam in shorts and a t-shirt. I mean, well, a t-shirt, that should be okay, but you don't need to wear a suit or anything like that. But don't be a slob. These things make an impression, but I don't think that's so important, to be honest.
Can I take
Iron your clothes before you come,
iron
that
your
will.
clothes? Can I take the exam sorry, can I take the exam in an West Ham United shirt or Arsenal shirt?
Arsenal, no. West Ham, yes.
The
You'll
worst.
get bonus points if you take it in a West Ham United shirt.
And if I take the Spurs shirt, that would definitely make me fail the exam.
You wouldn't be allowed through the door. You'd be sent home immediately to get changed to wear something more appropriate.
Yeah, if I were the examiner, I would do exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. It's desirable to be funny and try to make the examiner laugh.
Going to say no, I disagree, because I. But not completely, because I think if you have so much to worry about and think about for the exam, and it's, you know, you're going to be nervous, so you're going to be focusing on doing the tasks to the best of your ability and using good vocabulary, grammar, interacting, thinking about your pronunciation, the time. So to have to think, I have to make jokes as well, I would say no. However, if you do have an opportunity to say something funny or just you know, keep it lighthearted, I think that demonstrates to the examiners that you are confident and you have a good command of English. So I don't think you should worry about it, but it, you know, if you're that type of person, then don't hold back. You know, if you feel you want to say something funny, go for it.
And I
What's
guess
your
I'm
opinion on that?
lucky in this because actually humor is my coping strategy. I remember
Right.
when I was at university, before every single exam, I was the funniest person in the room. You know, there's like a waiting room of
Right.
all the students waiting for the exam. I was making everyone laugh, and that was because I was nervous about the exam. And that was
Right.
the way to calm myself down. I don't know where it comes from, why it happens, and what.
Yeah.
It's weird because like when I want to be funny, it doesn't always come, right? But when I'm really nervous or when something really matters to me, I get into this state of trance or what you might call it, and
Right.
suddenly I start cracking jokes. These are not jokes like your typical jokes where you tell a story. These are more like
Yeah.
situational jokes, you know?
Yeah.
So so
Just
so then when I took the IELTS exam, I remember the examiner kept laughing all the time. I
right.
couldn't believe it. I don't know. I even hadn't slept the whole night before
Right.
the exam. I swear to you, I just 30 minutes, maybe 1 hour
Right.
maximum, and then
Wow.
this happened. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's good. If that helps you to relax, then yeah, do that. I think as long as you're using good grammar, good vocabulary when you're telling the or making funny comments, then yeah, I think it's definitely
It's
not a bad thing. You're not going to lose marks. The only thing is, I don't want people to think they should come in with a joke prepared, like saying "knock knock, who's there?" That type of thing. Just if it comes up naturally. In you know in this in the exam or answering a question, then great. If you're that type of person, yeah, I don't think I could do that. I think, yeah, you'd need to. The one good thing is you'd need to have a pretty good level of any language to be able to make jokes. Yeah.
let's be honest, not everyone is good at being funny and
No.
telling jokes. Like people have a different level and ability.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, as
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
said, like I wouldn't come with jokes. Like
No. No. Definitely.
you could come with the joke of the IELTS examiner and a candidate and another interlocutor went to a bar, and then it's
Yeah,
not gonna work. So
well, it depends how it finishes. But
it's
I think
fun.
the
It's
important,
funny, but like it's irrelevant, kind of, isn't it?
irrelevant and inappropriate, perhaps. But I think the important point here is that you don't have to take it so seriously. This is an exam, and people are often very intense and very serious. But you can be lighthearted and just enjoy the moment. I know it's easy to say and very difficult to do, but if you can have that attitude, it changes your experience
And
completely.
you know how I told you I know an IELTS examiner? And we often have beer and we talk about this. And he says to me, okay, now I have let the cat out of the bag. It's a he, but that's as far as I'm willing to go. Okay, I can't reveal his name.
Okay, I think
Famous last words.
they're be careful, yeah.
But well, basically what he tells me is that it's often for them it's like a routine, and they every time is the same, right? All the time. And then when there's someone who's different, who's funny, who's attempting humor, it's like a breath of fresh air for them, Ben. So,
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, these examiners see dozens of, or sometimes they see dozens of candidates every day, and you know, they're asking the same questions and often getting the same answers or very similar answers. So if you
exactly.
get a student who's more relaxed and lighthearted, and I can imagine they would appreciate it. I mean, they're professional and they will be evaluating what you're saying, but it does demonstrate that you're confident, you have a good command of the language. So yeah, it's like the idioms. Don't force it in for the sake of it. But if it comes up naturally, like a joke or a funny comment, then go for it.
You say they're professional and all that, but I would also add that they are also human beings. Yeah. So
That's yeah, exactly.
if you make their life, if you make their day better, they are probably going to end up giving you a half a point more. You know, it's their. They might not even be sure themselves. Is this person 8 or 7.5? And then they remember the joke you told them and the fact that
Yeah,
you'd made them laugh, you
it's
know?
a nice guy. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's,
exactly. Nice guy, friendly.
give them an eight. Give them, yeah, I think it's, yeah, as you said, they're human beings. Yeah,
You know,
they're completely.
It just reminds me of a video because I was recently teaching a lesson when I was sort of playing some videos of candidates which I had found on YouTube. And there's one video on YouTube of a guy taking the IELTS exam. I don't know if it's like staged or anything, if it's real. I don't think it's real. It's just it's pure comedy gold, Ben, because there's a candidate. Yeah, he the in the title it says it's 1.5. So his English is really poor. But the funniest bit for me is when they ask him in part two of the IELTS exam about his favorite teacher. And he basically says that I don't have a favorite teacher. I am my teacher. Teachers zero. He doesn't use verbs much. He says, teachers zero. I am the best teacher. I'm the It's like all teachers suck. So don't do that. You're just basically insulting the examiner because the examiner is probably
A
an
teacher as well,
ex
yeah.
English teacher or still an English teacher, right? So
That's
just
not
use
a good
common
strategy.
sense. Just use common sense, you know.
Yeah, I think he's not doing himself any favors there. Maybe that's why he got 1.5. It's or one of the reasons is
Google
making
it.
enemies.
It's such a funny video. It's such a funny video. It's just type the write down in the search bar IELTS 1.5 and you will find this guy taking the exam. It's such a funny dude, honestly.
Right. I'll
All
look for
right.
it.
Okay, I've got about six more, yeah? Let's do it. Lying about your life and your opinions isn't the worst idea.
I agree. It's definitely not the worst idea. I think it's absolutely fine. The examiners they couldn't care less whether you're telling the truth or not. They're just evaluating what you're saying. So it's not, sorry, how you're saying it. I always make that mistake. They're evaluating how you say it, not what you say. So yeah, the only, if you get a question and you think, I don't know, like, what's your favorite,
Art
tell us about your favorite holiday abroad. And they say, oh, well, I've never been abroad. I don't know what to say. Well, invent something. It's like when I went to Africa when I was 17, I traveled. Just invent something. The problem with that is it's always more difficult to lie than to tell the truth. So if you do have a
Exactly.
true anecdote or something honest to say, then go with the honest option. But yeah, they're not evaluating your honesty; they're evaluating your English level. So yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. It's much easier to tell the truth. It's much easier to tell a personal story. So one thing you could do is if something that hasn't happened to you has happened to one of your close friends or relative, that may work because you probably know the details of the story. Otherwise, you should really be confident about being able to make things up and embellish your story, let's say. Yeah. So
I think
otherwise, I wouldn't recommend it. In my opinion, Ben, it's even fine to say I don't know. If someone asks me about my favorite art gallery or anything to do with art, it's my least favorite topic. I would just be completely honest with it. I would say I'm afraid I'm no expert in this field. I know nothing about art, and then I would also justify it. I would say why I know nothing about it, and that's it.
Yeah,
That's
that's
what I would
important.
do, you know. Yes.
Yeah, I think honesty is the best policy. And you're not, as you said, you're not expected in these exams, you're not expected to be an expert in any field. You're not expected to have any special knowledge. So be honest. Yeah, the important thing is to, you can't just say, I don't know. You have to say, to be honest, I'm not, it's not my area of expertise, but what I would say is blah, blah, blah. So say something, just whatever it is, say something. But I do think in general, honesty is the best policy, but you can lie. One important difference between the IELTS and the Cambridge exams, my understanding is in the IELTS, you have some time, the students have some time to prepare their answers
For
for part
part
two.
two.
Okay,
So
right.
it's only the second part. They have 1 minute to prepare, and you get a
Right.
cue card as well. So it's like a
Yeah, right.
structure. It gives you a structure. Usually, you have to describe someone or something that happened to you, or you're describing a physical object or something like that.
And you can, and the candidate can take notes, right? They can
You have
write
1 minute
something on a
to
piece of paper.
prepare, and then you speak for 2 minutes, and you can use your notes to talk
Right.
about that thing.
In the Cambridge exams, you get in part, let me think, in part three of the B2 first and C1 advanced, you get 10 seconds or 15 seconds to read the information on the paper, but you don't have time to prepare. So
Yeah.
that makes a difference. If you can't invent a story and then sort of tell the story, you just have to start speaking and you have to think as you're speaking. So that makes a difference to whether you tell the truth
Yeah.
or invent something. I think it's better to it's better, as you said, to be honest, because it's easier to develop and to express yourself, but it's not compulsory. You can lie. The examiners don't care.
Exactly. Yeah. Because they, how could they possibly know?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. If you're not so confident, it's okay to speak with a low volume.
It's okay. No, I recommend you project and speak clearly. The examiners need to hear you and understand you. So, yeah, don't mumble. Try to pronounce your words clearly and try to project. So when you say it's okay, I recommend that you try to consciously speak loudly, well, not loudly, but loudly enough for the examiners to
Shout at the
hear
examiner.
you. Yeah, just project yourself enough so that they can hear you. But
Yeah.
yeah, yes, is that
I
your answer?
yeah, maybe I worded it in a weird way, and I've just realized. But the point is, I've come across some students who just because of being really shy and introverted and not confident, they end up being so quiet that you can barely hear them. And I think
Yeah.
that's a problem because their English is probably much better than they are able to show because of that. So if that's who you are, you have to work on this. In my opinion, it's really important because
Yes.
if the examiner is not even able to hear what you're saying, how can they hear that grammar, that vocabulary that they need to hear in order to tick the boxes and give you that
Yeah.
score? So you have to do something about this. If this is you, it's crucial to work on it, really.
I think it's you have to think of it like as a performance. You're not really being yourself, you're performing. So yeah, I know people are shy and introverted, but you just have to
You
kind of,
have to.
it's an act for those 15 minutes. And when you're preparing, practice by recording yourself on your phone, listening back. It's a horrible experience, but you'll get used to, you'll realize then that actually do I really speak like that? Do I speak so quietly and do I mumble so much? So then you can make an effort.
Exactly. You will fall in love with your own voice in the end. It's like the picture of Dorian Gray or something, right?
I don't know about that. Most people hate the
I
sound of
know,
their own voice, but yeah,
at
over
some
time, yeah,
point
you get used to it. Yeah.
you get used to it, you get comfortable with yourself,
Yes.
and I think that's almost true for everyone, right? Even I, when I started my podcast, it was the same for me, and now it's like I don't care at all,
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
true. Yeah.
So
Yeah. But yeah, you need to make an effort, I think, to make sure that at least the examiners can understand you and hear you clearly.
yeah, and this can definitely be learned. This is a skill, like treat it as a skill. Yeah, don't just some people just make excuses. You know, I've heard yesterday someone told me it's about luck. The exam is about luck. I said, no, it's not about luck. Like
No.
that's yeah. Okay. It's like when you say life is about luck. It kind of is, right? If something happens that like an accident or something that it's more like circumstances that you were in my opinion. But if the problem with saying that is because it will affect your own mindset, and that you're gonna use it as an excuse not to prepare or just not to put in the hard work. That's the problem with that statement for me. It factually it may even be correct because you don't really. If they ask me about football, I'm more likely to get a better score. That's just the way it is because I know way more football vocabulary and all that. But do you know what I mean? You should definitely not think
It,
like
it's
that.
a it's a bad attitude to have,
Yeah.
and as you said, you're making excuses before you've even started. So yeah, if you do get a question on something you have no idea about, then you just have to deal with it. You have to just relax and answer it as you can.
Yeah.
They again, they don't care if you have no idea about football and you Don't you can't even name a football team or a football player. It doesn't matter. Just answer the question. It's really the questions are prompts to give you an opportunity to speak and so that the examiners can evaluate the content of
Yeah.
what you're saying. So don't worry too much about how you answer the question or what you're,
And
whether you're giving a really superficial answer or a really silly answer.
for me, if they ask you about something you have no clue about, just have it prepared. First of all, don't say I don't know. Instead of saying I don't know, say I have no clue. I haven't got a clue. That's an idiom, right? But they start like that. I don't have a clue, but or say I'm no expert at all, because I'm not knowledgeable in this subject. Like, prepare a sentence like that. Prepare for that contingency. Have some like structures, like template structures that you can use. And then, in my opinion, the best approach is just a bit of self-deprecation, even like make it fun. Like, make it fun for yourself. Like, it's like almost like some kind of improvisation, and then just explain why you don't know anything about it. That's the way I would do it. Like, why is it that I know nothing about art? Or why is it? Because I've never been into it. Because every time someone invited me to go with them to an art gallery, I chose to see a football match instead. I chose to play football match, something like that. Super
Yeah,
simple.
it's funny. I remember in one of my classes, I had a student who, there are a lot of questions about technology in the Cambridge exams, probably in IELTS too. And every time this student got a question on technology, she would say, I'm sorry, I'm not at all tech savvy. I don't know about that kind of thing. That's a nice expression. But by
Absolutely.
the end, you know, she attended lots of classes and she got so many questions, she became an expert. She started to read articles about technology because, you know, she realized she's going to need to speak about them in speak about that topic in the exams, but you don't need to become an expert on every topic. You just need to be able to answer the question well. And as you said, expand. I love the way you answered that, your own question about art, just
That's what
saying
I
a
would
little
do.
bit, anecdote, you know, expand. As you said, you could say, I haven't, another nice idiom is, I haven't the foggiest. I haven't got the foggiest, but that but is so important because that signals that you are going to keep speaking. You're not just going to say, I don't know, I haven't got the foggiest. Full stop. No, it's, I'm going to say something so the examiners can evaluate my level. That's the
Exactly.
idea of the exam.
Or you could also say, I don't give them the monk I don't what is it? I don't give the monkeys about this, right? Something.
I don't give a monkeys.
I don't
I
give the
don't give a monk.
monkeys.
I don't give a monkeys.
I
Well,
don't give
yeah,
the
that might be a
monkeys
bit.
about technology,
Next question.
since I'm not that tech savvy. But since you're asking me this, then I might as well try to answer. I mean, there are so many ways you can approach this. Just treat it as a challenge and be prepared for that contingency. It's always going to happen, right? Not always, but there's a good likelihood that it may happen. So be prepared to say something like that. Have a
Yeah, exactly.
strategy. Have a strategy.
Couldn't
Like
agree more.
almost like an escape route or something. All right. To score high in pronunciation, it's good to have a native-like accent.
No, I would say, well, again, the way you've worded it's good. Native-like, I don't think that's necessary. I mean, we have to understand the difference between pronunciation and accent. You are expected to be able to pronounce the words clearly, you know, using the right intonation, right word stress, pronouncing individual sounds as they should be pronounced. But this word, as they, or this, you know, I say as they should be pronounced. Who is to say how they should be pronounced? There are many different accents, native English accents, and many different non-native English accents, and they're all valid. It doesn't matter your accent. In the Cambridge exams, I'm sure it's the same in IELTS. It's fine. It's about pronunciation. You need to be able to pronounce clearly. So I wouldn't compare yourself to a native English speaker because, first of all, which one? There are millions. And, you know, do you want to speak with a London accent, a Newcastle accent, a Scottish accent, a Californian accent, a Brisbane accent? So I don't think you should think like that. I don't think you should think about whether you're pronouncing as a native would, but you need to pronounce correctly. I mean, when accent and pronunciation overlaps and it can be a problem, for example, the pronunciation of the H, Italian and French speakers have a big problem with this, that they often don't pronounce the H. So they'd
And
say,
Cockneys.
yeah, and Cockneys, that's true. Exactly. Many native English accents don't
Hello,
pronounce the
mate.
H. Hello, mate. All right. I can't think of an example. How have you been? How have you been? So, how have you been? So that's the big question. I mean, you shouldn't do that in the exam, whether you're a Cockney or not, because that could be confusing. You should pronounce, like you say, I stayed in a really nice hotel. It should be hotel, or I'm very happy. Or my health is not so good. It should be I'm very happy. My health is not so good.
I thought you were talking about elves now.
Exactly. Well, that's it can get
Like,
confusing. It could get confusing, couldn't it? So you have to. It's a very sensitive and controversial question because, you know, in real life, I don't think it's a big problem. I love all accents. I love the Italian accent, the French accent. I love all accents. And in general, you can understand them, but sometimes it is a problem. It can be confusing.
yeah.
So in an exam situation, you should pronounce individual sounds correctly, whatever that means.
Yeah. Just you have
What's
to
your
sound
opinion on this?
intelligible, and
Yes.
that's the key word for me. Like, so
Yeah,
the examiner
that's a good word,
should
yeah.
be able to discern decode your message, right? And
Exactly.
it should follow some sort of, you say, like, it's hard to say what the standard is, but it should sound like English, basically. And the other thing, another point I would make is that basically you say that we shouldn't really think about that, but then all learners are obsessed with sounding like a native. That's the issue. That's why all this marketing is a thing. Sound like a native,
Yes.
but it's we both know it's wrong. If we are English
Well,
teachers, we are on the other.
it's the wrong perspective. It's a not a good way
Absolutely,
of looking at it
yeah.
because I've lived in Spain for 21 years. I speak Spanish relatively fluently, but I have an English accent. I don't think I will
Course,
ever lose that English, that
of course,
accent.
yeah.
And years ago, I worried about it, and I would probably feel embarrassed, not embarrassed, but you know, I would worry more about my accent. Now I don't care. You know, over time, you learn or you just naturally lose some aspects of your pronunciation of that accent. But if you force it and you try to imitate a native speaker, it's good for practice, the shadowing technique and all that. But this obsession with trying to be or sound native, it's not healthy. I don't think it's not
No,
a good way to look at it.
you're putting too much pressure on yourself as well, and it's just,
Yeah.
and often it's like something unrealistic. Like the goal of sounding like a native is just most of normal human beings just don't ever achieve that, and
And you can sound.
that includes me. You would most native speakers would like 99% of native speakers from the UK would know that I don't come from the UK. They would just know, right? Although I do get from some people like I sound like a native, and some people think that I'm from native English speaking countries. It has happened
Yeah.
to me, but is that even a point? It's not. It's not.
No, I mean, there is something, I mean, there's nothing wrong. Obviously, you speak very, very well. You have a very
Thank
good
you.
level of English in general, but
Thank you.
there's something that tells me that you're not a native speaker, but that's not because you're making any kind of mistakes with your pronunciation. It's just something. But the same way that I can tell that somebody from Newcastle is not from London. It's just
Yeah.
a different way that they speak. It's not
Exactly.
a
It's
problem at all. It's nice.
no.
As I said, I love
It's fine.
accents,
As
but
long as
it's something you shouldn't obsess about and shouldn't, it should happen naturally and don't force it. Because when you hear people trying to sound like, I was going to say the Queen of England, because the King of England, I guess, it sounds a little bit silly because you're not going to get it right, and
no.
nobody speaks like the King of England except the King of England anyway. So just let it happen naturally. It's about, yeah, being careful with individual sounds, but not necessarily trying to sound like a native. It's
Exactly.
unrealistic.
Okay, Ben, we are recording this on Zoom and we have about 2 minutes left. So I'm gonna do one more, but I will
Okay.
ask you to be
Concise, yeah.
concise. So my next one is, you should keep your answers succinct and to the point. See what I did there?
Very nice. Perfect final question.
Yes.
Yes, you should in general. That's the short answer. That's the succinct answer because you don't have much time and it's answer the question and expand a little, but not, you can't, you can't tell your life story just to answer the question, expand a little.
And that's what you just did.
Yeah, I've been very careful.
You've proven your own point. And that's
Exactly,
what
yeah.
I would expect, if I'm honest, I would expect nothing less from Ben, from To the Point English, from
Yeah.
the To the Point English channel.
Exactly. I have to remind myself to be to the point sometimes. That's why I gave my channel that title because it helps me to keep it in mind.
Yeah. No, I think it's quite an interesting name, like a catchy name, but also slightly unusual as well in some way. So I think it's interesting. Yeah.
Well,
All right,
the
Ben.
English with, sorry, go on, yeah.
No, go on.
I
You.
was just going to say the English with Ben part is very important because if you Google English with Ben, my channel comes up because you get English with Lucy, English with so many different people. So English with to the point is kind of extra, but English with Ben is where people find me usually.
That's right. Well, thank you very much, Ben, for talking to me about Cambridge exams and going through these statements. And well, I hope to speak to you soon again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Zdenek.
No worries, man. Take care.
Take you too. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thanks a lot for listening. For more information, visit my new website, teachersdenek.com, where you can find out about my speaking group for high-level English learners called the Achievers Chamber and download my free course, Unlocking Your English Potential, 8 Secrets to Fluency. That's teachersdenek.com.